You're listening to Irish Sports Talk.
Hello, Notre Dame fans. Welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 433, and we're going to talk about Notre Dame's embarrassing loss to Miami, 41-8. Some things that we learned, and then discussing some questions. When did we first realize that Notre Dame was in trouble? Did Notre Dame rely enough on the ground game? And would that even have made a difference? And what is there left to play for in this season? And we'll get to a few other things as well. Randall, you're here, of course. And you were down in Indy. And I guess we didn't watch the game together, but we were chatting a little bit back and forth.
Well, I do know one thing. I will never watch a Notre Dame game at a hotel again. I watched at a hotel, and this happened. The last game that I watched at a hotel was the Alabama championship game. So,
you're banned from hotels forever.
The other thing that might have made a difference when we were sitting down at the lounge area there at the hotel, Chuck Pagano, the Colts' horrible coach, was sitting 10 feet away from us eating his supper, so that probably added to it as well.
He was eating supper. You weren't eating at the hotel. You were eating at St. Elmo's.
Yes, we were just at the hotel then watching the game. Down for the Colts game on Saturday, so we've been down at the night before. And while we're sitting there watching the Notre Dame game, we also realized that we're at the hotel where the Colts stay the night before.
Okay.
So that's why he was there. We're like, wait, there's some other players around here.
And yeah, you got to meet someone, right?
Yeah, the next morning, I went downstairs to get coffee, jumped the elevator, started going down. All of a sudden, the doors open, and in walked Frank Gore and one of the backup offensive linemen. I was like, oh, hi, how you doing? So, anyways.
Well, some things that we learned. I learned the animosity that a lot of Notre Dame fans feel towards Miami. I finally feel it now, too. I was too young. I was born in 88, so I didn't appreciate a lot of the hate between these two universities. But I definitely do now. Just the arrogance of Miami and then having them destroy Notre Dame the way they did just adds to it. It was so bad that I even got a text from an Ohio State fan friend that kind of giving some condolences.
Well, they've gotten beat.
And they're in a similar situation. I told him that this is one year where I think Notre Dame fans and Ohio State fans can sit around fire and hold hands. So,
well, was it Thursday night? I sat down and I watched the 30 for 30. I had never completely watched the 30 for 30 comics for Catholics. And I watched all of that. And then Saturday morning, I was watching the College Game Day, and they were talking about that and showing quite a bit about Miami. And just, I was already hating them, and this happened, and I just wanted to. Let's just say there's a lot of hate for Miami now. And what I will say, I'm done with this talk about faceless opponents. Miami should not have been a faceless opponent. Miami came into this game, and they did not take Notre Dame as a faceless opponent. After that first touchdown that Berrios, or whatever his name is, scored. Did you see him walk away with his hands behind his back, act like he was cuffed? They didn't take Notre Dame as a faceless opponent, and they showed up and acted like it, too.
Okay, let's start with this, then. When did it start? When did you realize that Notre Dame was in trouble? And Brian Kelly said in the pregame little interview on the sideline, he just talked about the players, the team needing to match the emotion and excitement or energy that Miami had. And I thought it was a very wise thing, and I agreed with him, because that was one of the things I was worried about, is Miami being too hyped up, too focused, and Notre Dame being taken aback, being shell-shocked. And from the first few drives of the game, I thought that Notre Dame was able to match the intensity. Maybe they looked a half step behind, but I thought they were... It looked normal. Like, I wasn't worried. Notre Dame offense, I thought, looked... Hey, we're going to get things rolling. It's going to be all right. That changed when Brandon Wimbush completely he just lost it. He was a different player, and you could see it in his eyes, and the TV commentators were talking about it as well, that you could see it in his eyes, and I think that carried over into the defense. Now, the defense was not helped out at all by the offense. They were often, Miami had terrific field position outside of, definitely their first drive was around the 10, and the second one I think was around the 20, but after that, Miami had excellent field position, and it felt like the entire game was played on Notre Dame's side of the field, whether they were on offense or defense. It just felt like Miami was always about the midway point or nearer.
Well, it didn't take long to get there.
But do you agree? Like, you could see it in Brandon Wimbush's eyes.
Yes,
he couldn't even throw a simple screen pass. And the first two drives, I thought he overthrew EQ, which, who knows? I mean, the thing about football is at any point, someone can make a play, regardless of the play call. At any point, someone on offense or defense can make a play that can get the momentum rolling. And all those plays were happening on Miami's side, all of them. I thought Notre Dame had a chance when they dropped that first interception on the opening drive. I thought, oh, hey, Notre Dame, maybe we'll get lucky.
Yeah.
But clearly we did not.
Well, I knew. I wasn't giving up hope right away. I mean, Notre Dame's, they've been down. What was the Boston College game? You know, a lot of people were, oh, you know, this is just, we should be blowing them out and this and that. And I was seeing comments about how bad this was, but I knew for sure when Book came in that was a bad sign. I don't care who your backup is. When you're pulling out the number one star, I'm not saying it was a bad decision. Like, Wimbush didn't know what was going on. But I'm saying when you're at that point doing that, pulling it for a backup and you're down, you're not coming back from that game.
I agree with you, but I do think it was the right thing to do because Brandon Wimbush, yeah, he needed just to be sat down and just get his head cleared because he was out of it.
Well, yeah, but I mean that's a sign that it's bad.
Yeah, and I agree with you because I knew there was no way Notre Dame was going to win with Ian Book at the helm.
They weren't going to have a comeback.
No, they weren't going to be able to mount the kind of comeback they needed.
Well,
to.
Well, and you just took away. I don't lie with it. Brandon is obviously your number one starter,
mm-hmm.
And when you take him, when you bench him like that, that messes with your confidence, especially a college age kid.
I don't know. Because when he came back in, he looked better. And it wasn't until after the half. But when he came back in the second half, he didn't have that same look in his eye. And he did, Notre Dame did, was able to, they won the third quarter, 8-7. One positive takeaway.
But, yeah. Then I knew it was a disaster. Then I knew it was a complete disaster.
So,
but the whole thing, I just think it was a bad... One thing I was worried about... Well, we'll admit it right away. Our predictions were completely off. And I will say that Miami has more speed than Notre Dame. I was arguing that point that Notre Dame is closer to that, but Miami definitely has some speed on the team. But I was feeling pretty good with my prediction because there was a couple other guys that had the exact same score prediction that I did going into the weekend.
I think, didn't you have the same one as Pete Sampson from Irish Illustrated?
And Coach D from
Blue
really?
And
Gold.
Okay.
And I had my prediction out first, by the way.
So you're part of the trifecta.
Anyways, so I was like, I had never heard, especially Pete, I had never heard him predict a score like this. And so I was like,
against a good opponent.
Yeah. Anyways, let's not even mention the prediction podcast, if anybody expected Miami to win, it was going to be a close game.
Yeah.
But
one thing that I was sure about, I didn't expect, when Notre Dame was down by 20 points, even before the pick six, going into the half, I didn't think Notre Dame would be able to come back from that, even with Brandon Wimbush.
Yeah.
Because the crowd was, they were very, very into it. And you could just feel it.
Well, Brian Kelly could hardly hear the question before the game even started. And there's so much. Well, first of all, I think this game plan was not good to start with. And they did not adjust.
Okay, let's talk about the game plan. Let's start with
offense. Well, I just want to point out a couple things here. There was that. And then the crowd was obviously completely into the game. And we like to talk about how Notre Dame was not prepared for the moment, Brian Kelly included. But I will say this. If us as fans are frustrated about that, let's try to create an atmosphere as close. It'll never get to that. It won't
at Notre Dame Stadium, yeah.
But let's have that home field advantage, the yelling and screaming, where it messes with the other team. We don't have Georgia coming in and saying, oh, you know, it was nothing. We're used to playing in front of SEC crowds where it's insane. It was basically like playing a home game. So if you want to be upset and you want to do something about this, start with that.
I come from a different perspective, Randall. If you want me to go to your games, then put a product out in the field that is worthy of me coming to a game. And this season, what was that kind of a year?
Well, I'm saying trying to get as close to it. That way, when you go to Miami, and yeah, there's loud fans, you're like, big deal, we have loud fans at home.
Yeah, but it's still different. It's different playing it because the noise is for the offense.
They're not against you. I understand.
I know what you're saying, but I'm saying put a product on the field. I'm not going to go to a subpar product that isn't worth spending money on. And I say that in general. This year, the Notre Dame product was good. It was very, very good.
And you know what? The attendance has been down.
I don't understand that.
Because fans are just... Well,
they'd rather watch it at home.
Well, that's...
I would rather watch it at home.
Well, I like being there at the USC game, screaming my lungs out and losing my voice. So,
let's talk about the game plan. Did Notre Dame rely enough on the ground game, or what game plan? What you said that you didn't think it was a very good game plan. Could we get into that a little bit?
Well, okay. One thing I've been worried about, and I think I've mentioned it earlier, is that Wimbush getting more comfortable throwing the ball, they were going to rely more on that. And but they're definitely passing a lot more than what they did going into Temple. Or George even. Like, it's more, we've seen what Brian Kelly has done with quarterbacks that get experience, and so that's something that always scares me with quarterbacks getting better at throwing the ball.
Randall, what difference do you think there is with, and you're right, Brandon, they did throw more passes in the first half.
What was the total passes that they,
well, let's
27.
Let's just go first half, because at that point the game is still within reach. It's not like you're trying, I mean, for most of the first half in every game, you're trying to score points, whereas in the second half, that's where things get more lopsided. So I actually tallied up the first half rushes and passes and compared it to the Miami game.
Okay.
And you're right. Notre Dame did pass more than
compared
average.
Compared to which game?
All the previous games.
Oh, gotcha.
When you just figure the first half, though. And I'll give you, in the first half, Notre Dame rushes 59% of the time.
Okay.
And then in the Miami game, you're right, they did pass more than what their average had been, but it's not as much as you'd think. It was still, they still rushed 20 times to 17 passes. And I included sacks as a pass, and I didn't include the final rush of the game where Josh Adams ran it, but it was pretty, yeah. I didn't even include that as a rush because I was pretty much just running out the clock. So it's not like it's 5%. Well, I don't know. I guess maybe you think that is a huge difference. I don't think it's that big of a difference.
Well, it's not necessarily even the amount. It's when you do it as well. It's a little easier to when you're, let's say, 2nd and 7. It's a little easier. Like, oh, well, let's just throw the ball and get a first down right away. Or it's instead of running the ball 5 yards and then you know that on 3rd down you're going to get the first down. I think they're more apt, have more tendencies to throw the ball in earlier, because, like, oh, we can throw the ball, so let's try this. It's not like, oh, we can't, you know, we're not sure about this passing game. He hasn't been doing good. Let's just run the ball and do our thing. There might not have been that much difference. But obviously Miami was prepared for everything Notre Dame did. They even talked, Mark Richt said after the game that they were actually, in their headsets, the coaches were predicting what Notre Dame was going to do on offense. And they were right. And here's what's upsetting is that, okay, fine, whatever, you start the game like that, but then make adjustments. Obviously, the speed of the game, Miami's speed, like, you would see the linemen pull to the other side trying to create gaps. By the time they got over there, the Miami defenders were already had already made the tackle.
Okay, and I agree.
And watching this, I didn't notice it right away watching the first time, but rewatching the game, you saw it over and over. And so, shouldn't they have learned from the Georgia game? Bring in an extra tight end. Bring in, let the running back block. Do more to help out that line. Help them stop it. Because all they were doing, they were making Brandon Wimbush throw the ball. They took away the run game.
Okay, but Brandon Wimbush had shots. He missed guys, and well, guys dropped passes.
I agree.
So, I mean,
but he didn't even have time to throw the ball.
Yes, he did.
No. On some of the, what I'm saying is, on some of those options, he didn't have a chance to make a play.
Okay.
The lineman, by the time the lineman got over to create the gap, he was already getting tackled. The line, I saw McClinchy and Nelson sweep over to the right side. Nobody's there to block because they're already behind him. And so you see stuff like that, and you would think they would bring in more help. It happened early in the year in Georgia, and we thought they were going to do it. They did it a little more after that. I think, was it against Boston College when they, it seemed like they had more guys in the line, more tight ends to help. But here's the chance to bring in your third tight end that you're always talking about. Have two backs there.
Bring
your
fullback.
We hardly
in.
Saw that. Bring the fullback.
We hardly saw it. And the one play that they did bring in Tony Jones for as a second back, he ran it for, if not a first down, at least a nice chunk of yards. Yeah. And I'm not at all saying that the play calling was great.
It was all around.
I'm just saying the players also had opportunities and didn't execute.
I totally agree with you. There, every facet of this game, every level was bad, including the coaching, the assistant coaches. Some people thought that the best decision Brian Kelly made, you know, I've seen some comments where they want to get rid of Brian Kelly, you know, and just obviously the assistants are doing it. The assistants, Chip Long and Mike Elko, made mistakes in this game, too. This was everywhere.
I think a big part of it comes down to lack of confidence.
Yeah, and
because when Brandon Wimbush looked comfortable in the pocket, Notre Dame moved the ball. They converted two third downs that Brandon Wimbush made a pass on in that first drive, and it was like a switch was turned on the. On his third or fourth drive, you could just see it. He looked totally different, and that did. You could see it in the. I could see it in the defensive players too. They did not have that same level of confidence flying downhill. You saw missed tackles. You saw Niles Morgan not making tackles, not getting in the hole enough to get a good solid hit on the running back. And I think this game very easily. And I know, yeah, I'm being a homer, but I do think that Miami is not that much. I don't think Miami is better than Notre Dame.
Here's the thing.
And I do think that Georgia is better than Notre Dame. I don't think Miami. They're definitely not 30 points better than Notre Dame.
No, Notre Dame played their worst game of the season by far, and Miami played. Absolutely out of their minds, the best game of the year. And it all happened. It happened on the same day at the same time.
I do think a big part of what you said, Randall, the whole faceless opponent thing, I do think that plays a part. Because if it's a faceless opponent, if Miami is getting up, getting ready to compete and getting into and pumped for this game, and the other team isn't, Notre Dame, you're not going to be able to match their intensity for 60 minutes.
Yeah, and I honestly think that some of the hype, you know, I was okay with the 33 trucking thing because I hadn't liked it that came out before the North Carolina State game, but then North Carolina came out, Notre Dame destroyed them, Josh Adams had a huge game, I was like, it's not going to matter. But even as much as Josh Adams says, you know, that it doesn't affect him. He doesn't hear whatever. I think in this game, he felt the weight. He felt like he needed to make a play, and I think it made a difference. He waited too long. He was waiting for that big play, looking for that big play, and he didn't have the luxury of taking that time to do that. Instead of just plowing ahead, putting his shoulder down, and getting yards, he felt the weight on his shoulders. I really think he did.
He definitely looked like he was... He didn't look like himself. He looked
That whole situation is weird.
Yeah.
It honestly is. We finally kind of reasoned it away after last week's game, but then he has a neck sprain, I guess.
Let's just talk, since Brian Kelly has been a topic a lot, I still think Brian Kelly, I have more confidence in Brian Kelly right now than I did midway through or at the end of last season. Yeah. And even at that point, I wasn't ready to say throw in the towel. I always wanted to say give him a chance, let's see what he does. And for those of you saying Brian Kelly will never win the big game, he'll never, why are we always losing to teams like this? Just look back over this year.
Michigan State.
And I had mentioned that I don't think Miami is better than Notre Dame, but I do think Miami, or I do think Georgia is. Well, it was a one possession game without any home field advantage. 1 point game, sorry. And then we curb stomped Boston College, Michigan State, USC. And this USC team, it's kind of like the exact thing that happened to, I mean, I don't think Notre Dame is 40 points better than USC. They're not. USC is a good team. But Notre Dame destroyed them. And Brian Kelly used them as an example after the game. And I think it's a good example. Because USC is a good team, and they bounce back and they're winning. Miami is not 30 points better than Notre Dame. It's really disappointing that they lost. This is more disappointing than the Georgia game, because I don't think Miami is better than Notre Dame.
Well,
and what's
basically, Miami came out and did to Notre Dame what Notre Dame's been doing to all the other teams. And you're mentioning all those wins. Notre Dame has the most, 20-plus wins in a row this year out of any college football team in the country. And they played one of the best schedules.
Yeah.
If you would have taken, at the beginning of the year, if I would have told you after Miami, Notre Dame would be 8-2, would you have taken it?
You would take that in a heartbeat.
Exactly. It's just, this is what's so frustrating. We finally started believing in Notre Dame. This year, we've talked about it. We were actually holding our hearts in our hands. And it was kind of like that one picture I saw. I'm not even sure who tweeted out, but it was a leprechaun laying on the road, completely smashed. It looked like he had driven over it 40 times, and there's gold coins laying everywhere on the road. And it's how every Notre Dame fan feels right now.
Yeah.
We finally believed in this team. And, you know, we didn't want to, even score predictions, everything, you know, can Notre Dame do it this week? Can they do it? If they do it this week, then they're a good team. Then the next week, you know, if they do it this week, then they're a good team.
How long did we do that?
We finally believed, bought in, predicted a big win against Miami, and we were crushed.
Yeah. And it is disappointing. I won't repeat myself. So Brian Kelly has been saying, we've been playing in a playoff since Georgia. Well, They're out of the playoff now.
So, don't even try to come up with a scenario.
So what is there left to play for? I mean, I had jokingly said, you can play for your pride. I mean, that's the only thing.
And no, I have one.
Okay, good. I do have one too, but go ahead. What is there left to play for in a season where, to Notre Dame fans, the only thing that matters to me is getting to the playoff. I don't care if we're in a New Year's Six Bowl or not, or if we're in some crappy lower quality bowl. If it's not the playoff, then it's bust.
No. Get into one of the New Year's Six bowls and win. That's something Notre Dame has not been able to do. Brian Kelly has not been able to do it. We have never won one of those big bowl games.
That is true.
Notre Dame has not done it yet. Every time they go, they've lost. And so that would be going to one of the big bowl games and winning that would be a huge step in the right direction, because they haven't done that yet. So really, in reality, I mean, you should be able to do that before you even get into the playoffs. We always want to get in the playoffs, but we can't even win a big bowl game. So what Notre Dame needs to do is make it in one of the big bowl games and win. And that's something they haven't done yet.
That is true. And I asked a question and then commented on what we've said in the past. You know, well, what if you lose? There's nothing left. That is a good point. And one thing I had thought about, too, since the loss is just what you said, consistency. We haven't been a consistent 10-win team. We've been 1 year here, 1 year there. If Notre Dame can get back, if Brian Kelly can take Notre Dame to just being a consistent 10-win team, that is taking a step forward where he hasn't had the program before. One out of every 3 years, it's a 10-win team. But getting the program to where every year in November, it's legitimately playing for a playoff spot is a huge step. And the other thing is, not big program picture, but just for the next 2 years, ending on a really quality note, I think will help bring fifth-year players back. Players like Drew Tranquil, who maybe the NFL isn't something he wants to do, but maybe he just wants to go into life and get and start working. But if Notre Dame can bounce back and finish the season on a high note with the expectation of a playoff appearance next year, I think that'll help bring back some of these guys that potentially could go to the NFL on a lower draft, or maybe are thinking, well, maybe I'll just move on with life. Maybe they're not NFL caliber players, but maybe they just want to move on with life. And getting those fifth year guys back will be key for a playoff appearance next year, because I think Notre Dame's I don't think they're gonna be as good next year as an entire team as they are this year, because of losing some of the guys that aren't coming back, like McGlinchey and Nelson.
Nelson could come back.
He could, but yeah. Well, maybe
he's got unfinished business.
He does have unfinished business, yes.
Well, yeah, and we weren't expecting to be talking about the playoffs this year.
No,
ever.
No.
So I guess we did for 8 weeks.
And that's why I like talking about it as soon as possible, because you never know when that chance is going to get ripped away, so you may as well jump on it.
You just have to be...
You can be realistic.
You just have to be aware that your heart could be torn in two.
All right, those were all the topics, Randall, I had wanted to talk about. There was a...
Were you going to go through the positions?
If you want to, yeah. I don't think I have a whole lot to say, but maybe...
No, but I think we should a little bit.
Here, I did have one muscle flex I needed to get to. Notre Dame fans, oh, so classy. Brandon Wimbush sent out a picture on Instagram, and then he said, Big Q, seniors, we owe it to you guys.
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
And then, yeah, it's a picture of Brandon Wimbush kind of with his head down and Quentin in the background. Here, Andrew.Kelly. With two Y's at the end. Wimbush, you played the worst game of your life. What was wrong with you? And then Christian Ham just replied with choker. And maybe these are trolls. It could be. I hope these aren't legitimate Notre Dame fans, because if they are, then that's a very scummy thing to do.
I think in that same comment, somebody was telling him how he needs to take 3 to 5 steps back and just trying to point out some things he should change. But, I think the reason we should go through the position groups, it's hard to do. There's not much good to say
today. There's one other thing I wanted to say. In hindsight, we can clearly say, well, the players didn't execute, and the coaching strategy with running those plays, kind of slow developing plays to the sideline, was awful and it didn't work. And I just want to say, hindsight, we can see it didn't work. And saying that, oh, clearly it would have worked if Notre Dame would have used 3 tight ends and would have, Tony mentioned about, well, maybe Notre Dame just should have went lined up Stanford style with 3 tight ends, 1 back and 1 receiver, and just run the ball downhill. And it's easy to say that because we don't know what the outcome was. We know that what they did didn't work. And so I'm just saying, Notre Dame using something different and coming out with something very different they haven't done before, if they wouldn't have worked, would even had been more criticized than going with more of the traditional 2-wide, sometimes 3-wide look that Notre Dame has been showing all year and has had success with 95% of the time.
A lot of success.
Yeah. All right, go ahead. Yeah, let's go through the different position groups. Let's start with the offensive line.
Well, right away we saw that the the first year starting tackles weren't going to cut it. Hainsey and Kramer struggled a lot in this game.
And this is why Notre Dame's not going to be as good next year. The most important position group on offense is the offensive line. And we're going to have a couple, we're going to have two new starters, and some of them are going to be true sophomores or redshirt sophomores. They're going to be young guys coming in.
Yeah. But those guys, that's, I mean, they should have given them some help, something. But they were just beat. They didn't have a chance. And then they were obviously rattled too. Hainsey had a false start on a fourth down that Notre Dame was going to go for. Well, that took away that idea, which, you know, is too late, but they had just converted a fourth down earlier. But we talked about how the linemen, you know, the moving around, this and that. And McClinchy, his biggest thing with the NFL is going to be his speed. We've seen it over and over this season, is that his weakness is trying to deal with speed. And so you have both tackle spots,
and if you think
having
if
problems
you think
with the speed.
Division I players are fast. I mean, you're going to be going against the elite Division I players every snap.
Yeah. And, it was just what I'm saying. There's something bad to say about every position group this week, just because everybody just had a bad day.
I'll try to point out one positive in each group.
Okay.
Mustafer had good snaps all game long.
You're right. He did. We didn't see any. He wasn't rattled. We saw that last year where they're going over his head. But yeah, I would have liked to see more help for this offensive line, the tackles, trying to deal with these guys. And, you know, the running backs did a little bit, but they missed quite a few blocks. So. All right. The tight ends, you know, helped with that, but I saw Smythe missed blocks, Mack missed blocks. They did have some good plays. Alize got his first touchdown.
Okay, that's what I was going to say.
And
the
he
one
went
positive
up for it and got it in traffic. Like, it was fighting for the ball. I mean, it was that was an impressive touchdown. And, but he also, in one pass, he kind of stumbled, which it was a low pass, but he kind of stumbled and fell over too. But
even if he would have caught that, it would have been no gain.
Yeah. Smythe had a really good catch and run. Like, he caught it and actually ran with the ball. And that was kind of, that was another thing that stuck out. They talked about it in the postgame show as well, that center right over the linebackers and in front of the cornerbacks was open. And so that's kind of where Smythe caught the ball. That was one spot that was open. Notre Dame did not take advantage of it. Which, you know, maybe they didn't have, well, you said they did have enough time to do it, but they did not take advantage of that.
A couple of them they did.
Smythe had a catch and run. You saw it on those catch and run. Yeah. Stepherson had it. A couple of the players did do that.
I wasn't surprised by the amount of pressure that they got on him. It wasn't like I was blown away, like, hold it, they're going to sack him every play.
Yeah. But we should have seen a lot of Brock Wright in this game. The fullback, another tight end in there helping block, and we just didn't see it. All this talk of playing three tight end sets.
But we haven't seen it.
We haven't seen
it.
I agree.
At all. So
I agree.
It would have been.
But you would think that was an issue in the Georgia game. At least had the option to do it if you've run into that again. They did more of it after the Georgia game. I believe it was Boston College when they did more of that stuff.
They brought Brock right
in. And it worked.
Yeah. All right. Running backs.
Well, like we talked, something's not right with him. He's not 100%. Something is. They kind of explained it away with the headaches and the heavy workload. Well, all I say, they must have had a lot of exams at Notre Dame last week, because this whole team struggled. But I think the pressure kind of got to him, was getting to him. He was trying to make that big play, and I don't know if Dexter was 100% or not.
When Dexter, he only ran three times for 23 yards. When he came in, I thought it looked, we didn't see any top end speed from him, but his first few steps looked powerful and looked good. And he appeared to be running more decisive, less waiting, and just trying to get whatever was ahead of him. Whereas Josh Adams was more patient, and we have seen it pay off He's been a patient runner, and usually it pays off. It just didn't against Miami.
This was not the game to be a patient runner. And that's this was not his style of game. When it comes to a speed like that, this is not Josh Adams' style of game.
Well, and this is where I will blame the coaching, too, is that they probably should have been in his ear more as far as just get a few yards. Don't be so patient. Just get a few yards.
Because he did. I mean, he converted a fourth down. And he did have some nice runs, but a lot of times that, you know, the option between him and Wimbush or Book, whatever, it just took everything too much, took too much time, and there wasn't going to be a gap there for him. And he was kind of waiting. It seems like he needed to make that big play, and I think the hype was kind of getting to him.
So let's talk about Brandon Wimbush. You talked about running game. I've always been worried about using Brandon Wimbush heavily in the running game. But there's some times when you need that extra element, and he wasn't used enough. And I don't think it was even coaching. I think it was more on Brandon Wimbush decision making to pull the ball more and running with it. And Brian Kelly did mention that on the, I think he said the opening play of the game, handoff to Josh Adams. If Brandon Wimbush would have kept that, then it would have been a big gain for the Irish. And usually that's what the running plays are. I mean, it is a read on Brandon's part to keep it or to pull it or give it.
Well, they should have done – here's the thing. That was taking too much time. Notre Dame didn't have the option to do that. I mean, the option
– What was taking too much time? You mean like the decision
– Yeah. And they knew exactly – it was like they knew what was coming.
But that's what that's what's so special about the read option is
I
that
know.
The quarterback is supposed to be reading the defense.
But the guys stayed at home. Brandon made
some
wrong reads.
They didn't always stay at home.
But they should have done more quarterback draws. Get him on the move.
They should have done more quarterback draws and designed runs for him.
And if they would have been able to do that right in the beginning, if he would have gained some yards, I think it would have helped his confidence, and Miami would have had to watch for that. But the quarterback couldn't beat him. And they knew it. And here... Wimbush, you know, we talked about, I think it was last week when we said all his throws were short. This time, there were a couple of short and low ones, but most of them were over the heads of receivers.
Which is how it's been most of the year.
But I know, my point with last week was it's the same, like, basically the same for each game. Whether it's short, the next game they're long. Like, it's the same. It's not like he's all over. It's kind of the same. And Kirk Herbstreit kept talking about his footwork the whole game, how bad it was. So we had a discussion about it on our group chat today about Tom, you know, what does the quarterback coaching, is that quarterback coaching? Or Tony thought that's, you know.
Tommy Reese is rubbing off on him. I still want to give Brandon Wimbush time. I do think he is the future for Notre Dame, as long as he's there. Even when Phil Dracovic comes in, I still think Brandon Wimbush, he's done it in practice. I think it's just the experience, and then when he gets more comfortable with it, he'll be able to do things quicker with less brain power, less thinking. He'll just become automatic.
The only way Brandon Wimbush does not end his career as a starting quarterback, I mean, he's not going to get unseated by anybody unless he gets injured or, you know, something like that. If he leaves early or gets injured, that's the only way that one of the other guys gets a chance. They're not going to – he's has the experience now, and he can do what it takes. It's just going to take – you know, now he's been in a Miami game.
Brian Kelly made the comment about this atmosphere being more like Clemson.
Okay.
From 2015.
Yeah.
And then he said he was trying to think if there was any defensive players that, how did he say it? Shoot, I was going to make a joke. Now I screwed it up. He made some kind of comment about there not being defensive players from the Clemson game that were playing. And I was going to, the way he said it made it sound like he didn't have defensive players. And I was going to, you're right. You don't have defensive players. You didn't have defensive players against Miami.
Yeah.
But I just butchered that anyway.
Wimbush had a glove on his hand. I don't think it really affected him, but he had a very padded glove on his left hand. I don't think that really affected anything.
I don't think so either.
I hadn't even noticed it right away. I hadn't noticed it when I was watching it. I couldn't hear the announcers, and so I hadn't even noticed it. till I rewatched the game. But then Book, I thought Book came in there and did a good job, was making throws.
Here's what I'll say, my one good thing about the quarterbacks.
Okay.
Ian Book is decisive.
Yeah.
And the one time his decision was awful, but he's decisive.
Well, about that awful decision. Okay, yeah, he shouldn't have thrown it, but Jamie Uyama from ISD broke it down like each play by play. And I didn't see it. I just saw he tweeted out and said that that was the fourth time Notre Dame had run that, and they were waiting for it. So, but, yeah, it was a bad decision on both.
Was it the
but
fourth
it was
time,
also
was it the fourth time in the first half?
Yeah,
that Notre Dame had run it, but not
up so, to that point.
But how many times had Ian Book run it?
I'm not sure,
because I'm sure they're limited with his the plays that he's familiar with for that.
Well, I think he had run it. I think he had run it a couple times.
Okay,
and they were ready for it. I mean, they were waiting for it again. So that right there.
Okay, it wasn't great. Maybe it wasn't great play calling, but it was still he wasn't even looking at the defensive back.
And that's when you saw kind of the difference between when he was on the sideline. He definitely wasn't going to shake it off, and like you could see, he was devastated. And I mean, it was a pick six, so and that's I think when he knew that they were going to get their butts kicked.
If Notre
Dame came in and did a good job, and you know he was making throws, helping with the ball. I don't know how he didn't get sacked that one time, and I think he ended up getting the first down, or he was close to it. But he got away. He's deceptively. I don't know what
he's a white guy, so he's deceptively fast.
He got away from that and didn't get sacked. So he made some good decisions. And I think, you know, you don't like bringing the backup, but he did good coming in like that. I mean, I think that's what they should have done. But when a team is at that point needing, when the first string quarterback is so whatever, that it you're done.
Fahuddled.
So
we didn't talk about the wide receivers yet.
I think the wide receivers had a lot to do with this as well. Partially because they're playing Miami. And I had seen it in the college game day. They were talking about Miami receivers blocking.
Mm-hmm.
They are very, very good at blocking. They're probably the best blocking receivers I've seen. And Notre Dame should so it made it look worse for Notre Dame because their receivers were not doing it at all.
But the running backs hardly even got up to that level.
You mean Notre Dame's?
Yeah.
But I mean, even the receivers helping each other out. But like the screen pass, I mean, those throws.
There was one good screen pass.
Yeah.
That's my one good thing.
Okay. There's one. But I'm saying the receivers helped out Miami so much. Like the Miami receivers made a huge difference for them in that game. That's what helped throw off the defense. But Notre Dame's receivers just cannot block like that. But here's a good thing.
I disagree with you a little bit. Maybe they weren't really given opportunities to block because the running back never got to that level. You're right. They didn't maybe in the screen games, but that's been an issue all year long. Normally,
downfield.
Yeah, but normally they are doing a good job blocking downfield when the running backs do get up to that level.
Well, I'm not saying the running backs. I'm saying whoever has the ball.
Well, they barely got the ball either. There was only 13 completions.
True. But helping them make the play happen.
Okay.
Helping the guys get open.
That touchdown, missed touchdown pass, that was on Wimbush. Like, that was just overthrown.
Yeah.
But then you're right, they did hit their hands, but
Claypool dropped one.
Claypool dropped a first down.
See, that drive could have changed so much. Claypool dropped the pass,
mm-hmm.
and then that pass to EQ that was just overthrown. But there was the good thing is that EQ had a good game. He did.
He led the team, 4 receptions, 68 yards.
And then Claypool had a down game coming off of his best game of his career.
Steverson continues to be consistent, 43 yards on 3 catches.
He dropped one?
I think he dropped one.
He dropped one.
In the opening drive, he made that a first down. It was a third and 10.
Oh,
and he was hit behind the first down marker, but he didn't go down. and yeah. the Miami receiver was just going for a hit, didn't wrap up at all, but he made a couple guys miss and got the first down.
Yeah. And he also knocked away an interception then. It was, I think Book had thrown it.
Yes.
The defensive back had it, and the only reason that was an interception is because of what Stepherson yeah. did, knocked it out. So he did a good job with that, and we saw EQ seem to fight a little more for the ball, go up and get it. So that's the positives in that.
All right, defensive side of the ball. Defensive line?
Oh, the only thing, there were tip passes from EQ, off of EQ's hands, tip pass interception. Wasn't the one off Claypool's. Some of those interceptions were tipped, and you cannot let that happen.
Yeah, but that ball, I put, I mean, yeah.
It's a combination of the receiver and the quarterback.
He could have caught it, but again, that's just an awful pass, and it makes it really, right. really hard on your receivers when you throw balls like that are high and bullets.
We should send him a tweet and tell him to go buy some gloves off of Odell Beckham Jr.'s website. Anyways, right. enough for the offense.
Defensive line.
Just one stat for Miami. Going into this game, they were 101st in red zone offense.
And now they're
probably number one. defensive line. I thought the middle of that line just couldn't hold it up. They were getting runs right up the middle. I mean, it seemed like they just opened the Red Sea right in the guys just run up the middle. I mean,
Brian Kelly has talked about the linebackers being a part of what makes the defensive front able to hold up and push back.
Yeah.
And Coney had 9 tackles, led the team again. But then Niles Morgan, maybe you saw it differently, but I thought he didn't have a great game.
No.
At all. And
there was one
tackle if he's crashing down, that does help. You know, that does help the defensive line hold up better when they see Niles Morgan ready to crash down.
Yeah. Dalen Hayes made a big play one time where he actually stayed where he was supposed to, didn't bite. It seemed like this team, like the defense was biting on everything. They'd crash toward the middle or something. All of a sudden you'd see the guy going around the end. The first thing they saw, they went for it. And let me find it here. Go ahead.
I'll read off just some of the numbers here. Dylan Hayes did have 1 tackle, 1 quarterback hurry. Julian Okorah had 3 tackles, and he had a tackle for loss. Jerry Tillery had 3 tackles. Jay Hayes had 3 tackles and a tackle for loss. Or one of those being a tackle for loss. And then our true freshman, Myron Tagovailoa-Mosa, had 2 tackles, and Kurt Heinisch did not. In fact, I'm trying to remember, I don't know if I remember seeing him out there.
Heinisch?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was out there. Okay. Yeah. I was going to say, this defense, they didn't really have, which it could go with the linebackers, but they didn't have anybody spying the quarterback. And I think that's maybe why you saw so much of them. They always missed the guy that actually had the ball. It seemed over and over, it seemed like they went after the wrong guy.
It seemed like they were
and
trying to disguise things more, too. They would often switch right before the snap. You would see what they were trying to do. They would bring in an extra blitzer.
They were supposed to talk on their headsets and predicting. So.
Well, are you talking about? I was talking about Notre Dame's defense.
Oh, okay. I don't know. They knew this quarterback was going to be able to run, and it just seemed like they didn't expect him to be able to run at all. Like he was a Peyton Manning back there. But so the linebacker. I think the big thing was the linebackers, like you said. That what I didn't like was it seemed like I didn't see as much of Coney in the second half, and I saw a lot of
Greer Martini
missing tackles. But then Coney was out there as well. But
Greer definitely missed some plays, but I did see him make some plays too.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know what good thing did I say about the defensive line.
Well, I said Dalen Hayes stayed at home on one. Okay. He made the tackle, didn't bite on that on the first guy and made a tackle in the backfield. But Coney had some big tackles. Tranquil had a huge hit on the quarterback close to the end of the game where he took him out. But
Coney had a big tackle for loss either in the first or second drive of Miami. And again, you kind of felt at that time that Notre Dame was, they were still in it. And you just felt like they were clearly still in it. Like, oh, this is normal. Notre Dame's going to start stomping Miami into the ground. But that never happened.
Tranquil also had holding on one of the punts that cost him yards. But then he also had a big tackle on a kickoff. So he kind of offset that. But the one good thing with the linebackers, Morgan blocked a pass.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody dove for it, and you know it didn't get it, but there was a chance there.
I'm thinking it was Coleman, but maybe not.
I'd have to go back and see. But that's one thing with this. This is what worries me a little bit is the defense got no turnovers. They gave up a lot of yards, and they've done that in other games as well. This defense gives up a lot of yards, but they get the turnovers. So when they don't get turnovers, this worries me. Like, this is maybe what we'll see when they don't get turnovers.
Yeah. And did you watch the video of Elko with the defense around him?
No.
Talking about the turnover chain. You didn't see it?
No, I didn't.
If you watch it now, you'll cringe. But basically, he was saying, F the Miami turnover chain. We're going to go get turnovers, basically what he said.
During the game?
No, it was before the game.
Oh, okay. No,
that's the abbreviated version of it, with no energy. And he did have energy. And I don't know if that happens every game where the coordinators or position coaches are getting guys fired up. And I want to see that. But then when it doesn't go the way you expect or are told that it will go or told that it needs to go, you can lose your confidence. And that can corrode away what's been built up.
Well, this defense lives up. Even at Wake Forest, Mike Elko gives up a lot of yards. He just does, but people don't look at it because they force a couple turnovers and they win the game. Well, all of a sudden, when you don't force any turnovers, you realize how many yards they give up.
Yeah.
The yards given up really aren't really out of the normal. They aren't for that game.
And every game, Notre Dame is used to having one side. This is off topic. We'll get back to the position groups in a little bit. But we're used to either seeing the offense pick up the defense or the defense pick up the offense, and it just did not. It was a snowball effect the entire game, outside of the first, you know, two or three series. Yeah. Outside of that. Anyway, back to the position groups. Cornerbacks.
Love played pretty good.
I thought he played really good.
He didn't even make any big mistakes.
Yeah, even the touchdown pass the first touchdown pass that was on Sean Crawford. I mean, that was just an excellent pass and catch. I mean, it was just thrown to a spot where only he could get it, and he made a play with a foot or so.
Yeah, well, Sean Crawford was a step behind, but we often see that with Crawford. Crawford is usually scrambling to get to the. You see Crawford scrambling to get the receiver more than you see him blanketed.
I know.
Like Love does.
Yeah. But he still forced the quarterback to make a very tight throw. And sometimes that's all you can ask for.
Yeah. But Love, you know, one pass, he had best coverage you could get, and the pass was complete. I mean,
he wasn't listed with any passes defensed, but I thought he had a couple pass breakups.
Well, I don't know if you wouldn't. They just didn't catch him. I don't know if they're necessarily rated as pass breakups. Yeah, there were some that were close. But there wasn't an actual breakup, I guess. Okay. They just didn't, yeah. But Rozier, he made some incredible throws. I mean, that's what he can do when you can run the ball whenever you want to as well. Then the safeties, Coleman missed a big tackle. And then Studstill, we actually saw him a little bit. he came in and he forced the fourth down there in the second half. Made a big play, got tackled and forced a fourth down. I do think they converted the fourth down then, but he did help force the fourth down. So, anyways, I'm ready to move on. And the sad thing is, Navy, I just don't like it. Just doesn't feel the same if you go out and play Navy.
I hate playing Navy. It's the worst. You know what's really weird, Randall?
What's that?
Miami's third down efficiency.
Okay.
They were
horrible into the game.
They still are. They were 2 of 13 on third downs. Now, they converted 3 fourth downs.
Okay.
So if you would combine third and fourth down, that would put you at 5 of 16, so about one third, which is not great. But you would have thought, if you would hold them to 2 of 13 on third downs, that, oh, that is clearly Notre Dame's defense stepped up and was able to do what needed to be done. But no, that was not the case. Well, I think this what it comes down to, and Brian Kelly came back to it, is you can't turn the ball over that many times. You can maybe get away with one. But when you turn the ball over 4 times, you can't do it, and often it gives the opposing offense great field position, which it did a couple of times.
Yeah.
Anyway, I agree with you. I'm done with this. I'm ready to start thinking about next season. Is where I'm at. Finish strong.
I'm not.
I know you're not. Finish strong, so that the current players that are maybe thinking about the NFL or thinking about work, that they want to come back and finish what they started.
I still want to go in there and have a huge win in a New Year's Six Bowl.
Well, of course I'd be happy.
Oh,
with
I know,
it,
I know, but that's I what just, I'm looking at now. I'm not worried about next season. This is a good team.
I know it's a good team, and
this is a very, very good team. They have broken multiple Notre Dame records this year. They have done so much on the field. It's crazy. It's so easy to forget because it seems like we keep breaking records every year. And that's something Brian Kelly has been the coach of.
Yeah.
And we have gotten used to it. And I want them to get out there, beat Navy, because I'm planning to be there. And and you can still have a big win against Stanford. And go to the New Year's Six Bowl and beat whoever it is. I don't care if it's Ohio State, who it is. Just beat the crap out of them.
I guess one thing that we can look forward to or hope for is getting back to being a 10-win team, which Notre Dame hasn't been in my lifetime or since I've been a fan. All right, that's all I've got. We had a really nice turnout as far as downloads on the podcast. Hopefully you guys are a little less discouraged than what I am and will continue to care about Notre Dame football, because I do care about it. I'm just discouraged.
Yeah.
I'm not even discouraged. I'm just disappointed.
Well, the sad thing was I was on the way down to the Colts game Saturday morning. We're talking about it, and my brother-in-law was along. He's a Penn State fan. And, you know, it didn't seem very important at the moment, but he was telling me how they lost to Ohio State. They were up big and in the fourth quarter, and Ohio State comes back and wins and destroys their playoff chances. Well, they were undefeated at that point. He said it literally felt like his heart broke into, like ripped out. He said it was just like it physically hurt. He wanted to go home, and he did not want to talk to anybody.
Oh,
I remember because I had told him he could come over and watch football the rest of the night. And he was like, no, he's going home.
This loss did not hit me like that at all.
I was
disappointed very much because I thought Notre Dame was going to the playoff. I really did. I thought they were going to beat Miami and Navy and Stanford. I thought they were going to go to the playoff. But
this was one of the toughest losses, especially because of how it happened. But here, I thought it was a blowout. It wasn't like they even had a close loss. But here, I actually thought they were going to make the playoffs. Because you've had other teams, a couple years ago when they were going into Stanford, you know, win the game. But it wasn't like they weren't dominating like this team was. They were not. This team is something special.
Hey, real quickly, before we wrap this up, in the forums, Adam asked if we think that this 2017 team is, how does it compare to 2015 and 2012? I think that this team as a whole, and we'll know more about them in a few more weeks, but as a whole, I think they're better than the 2015 team. Though the offense was great in 2015, but the defense was awful. We've had 2 weeks where the defense gave up a lot of points, but it wasn't anything like 2015 where Notre Dame was giving up 35 points to anyone.
Yeah.
And then in 2012,
every lucky break went Notre Dame's way.
Exactly. Notre Dame was lucky many times to go undefeated that season.
Here is the thing. They got to Alabama, and it showed that they shouldn't have been there. It showed that they got there with a lot of luck. This team this year was dominating, where you actually could look ahead and talk about playoffs. It wasn't like, oh, well, the next game, you know, even 2012, you win by one score. Next week, you win by a couple points. You go into double overtime. Just every week, it was a long road to the championship game. It wasn't like that.
And Notre Dame was destroying good teams. Now, Michigan State got blown out,
and the teams are still doing good afterwards.
But USC is awesome. North Carolina State is still a top 25 team, and Stanford is looking, and we haven't beat them yet, so who knows? But they've had kind of an up and down year, but they're very good. They're a good team.
Yeah,
not a top 15 team, but a top 25 caliber team.
But we had two dominating wins against top 15 teams this year.
Yeah.
I didn't even do the score prediction. I didn't want to look at it because I don't think anybody predicted it.
I forgot to ask you. We did have an Ohio State fan and also relative who did trolled a little bit. It wasn't. He wasn't too mean spirited, because I think Notre Dame and Ohio State fans could actually come together and form some kind of union.
No,
not that I'm interested in that, but just for a moment, I just felt like, oh man, I feel the same way that Troy does.
Anyway. No, one of the guys that works for me, Ohio State fan, he's like, oh, I knew this was going to happen. And then we proceed to hear about how Ohio State could still get in the playoffs.
Oh, please. Anyway, we do need to find out the winner, and
I'll have it Wednesday.
Okay, you'll have it Wednesday, and we'll send out a direct message to whoever did win. Thank you guys for listening. Hopefully you made it all the way through this. And if you have thoughts you want to share with us, join the forums, forums.irishsportstalk.net. There's a link over on the website, irishsportstalk.net. And follow us on Twitter, you know our Twitter handle. And we'd love to hear what you guys think about Notre Dame football. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. And until next time, go Irish.
Go Irish.